You're listening to the Star Wars Report, Episode 1, C6 or Bust! Hello everyone and welcome to the Star Wars Report. I'm Riley.
I'm Bethany.
And I'm Mark.
And this is the second episode. Well, really our first episode. The last episode was really more of a pilot episode, but I'm so glad that you decided to tune in to this episode. Before we get into the news, which is really what the Star Wars Report is all about, let's go ahead and get some announcements out of the way. I'd like to be the first one to announce that Aaron Goins will be a contributing writer on our brand new website, StarWarsReport.com, and he will actually have a report from Disney Star Wars Weekends that he recently attended, and actually by the time this recording's out, that should already be up. So I'm looking forward to reading his experiences and being very jealous that I couldn't, that I couldn't attend.
No but, doubt.
Oh, yes.
I think it might be worse for us than you, Mark, because you're way out on the West Coast, and we're only like 9 or 10 hours away, but it's just far enough to where we couldn't quite make it. Although believe me, we tried. But
being on the West Coast, I mean, I've gone to Disneyland once, and the Star Wars action there is nowhere near what I'm seeing from Disney World. I mean, I'd be excited about that, but I got a friend that works down there, and she recently came up over the weekend and hooked me up with a Mickey Mouse lightsaber that Darth Maul himself used in the opening ceremonies of the new Star Tours, as well as a Star Tours launching cup. So I was pretty stoked to get that
stuff,
you know. Yeah,
cool.
But I can't wait for the Celebration 6 action, which
we'll
have news on that in this.
We got a lot to talk about, sir.
I'm expecting.
Yeah, I know. That's really the big topic of this show, although we are recording this on E3 Day. This as we record this is Monday, I believe the 5th. 5th or 6th. Yeah, 6th. And all these grand, amazing Star Wars video game announcements just happened. We just had our minds completely blown as the introductory cinematic was released to the Old Republic. But we'll be talking about that in a very near future episode, so no E3 news for this episode, but plenty of other stuff. We got Celebration 6, George Lucas Strikes Back's ebooks, propping up a dying system, growing up on Skywalker Ranch, our thoughts on Star Tours, and much, much more coming up. But let's start off with this first story, a little bit of an odd one. Evidently, you're not allowed to wield lightsabers at public schools. Who knew?
Yeah, this is a very interesting story. Two high school students in Westfield High School thought that a pre-planned, choreographed lightsaber battle in the school lunchroom would help them go out with a bang. So this is their senior year. They're about 2 weeks from graduating.
Yeah, sure.
And they go into cafeteria, stage a mock fight, walk up to each other, challenge each other to a dramatic duel, and maybe play around with lightsabers. they play around with lightsabers in a joking manner, proceed to fight, and just about 30 seconds, an onlooker said.
Okay,
but that
yeah.
was all for the show, according to their friend, Kevin Carr. Everyone in the schoolroom laughed at it, said Kevin, and gave them a standing ovation. Nobody saw it as a big deal, said Carr. But apparently it's a big deal to the administrators. The two students were escorted to the principal's office, suspended for 2 days, and told that they would not be able to walk in their graduation ceremony next Friday. Now, can you imagine that? You're about to graduate from high school, and you're told you can't walk, possibly even can't graduate. Because you've been suspended.
Well, I had a similar situation in high school. That is the administrative last chance to flex their authority. I had the same thing said to me over a prank, and it was over a building that was going to be demolished within 2 weeks of the said quote unquote little bit of vandalism that was done. And it's just one of those things. It's like in this situation, again, they're worried about the could be's and the ifs of somebody possibly getting hurt. And they wanted to make a big example out of this kind of behavior should not be tolerated. I mean, even at the end of it, the guy was okay with what happened. And
yeah.
So to me, it's just a classic example of an administrative flexing their power for the last second and threatening boys with their, you're not going to be misbehave, fanboys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just picturing you're in your high school cafeteria. And it must be pretty cool high school if they get a standing ovation from a lightsaber duel.
Yeah.
I kind of want to attend
yeah.
that school, by the way. But
my if these administrators weren't there, perhaps.
I'm telling you, Bob, these kids don't know how to behave today.
They were trying to kill each other. I'm telling you, man. Yeah. They wouldn't talk like that, but...
Well, there was an update to the story, and they were able to graduate after all, and I'm not sure that... I hope that means that they weren't, like, considering not, as opposed to not graduating.
Well, actually, what happened was they sent sincere letters of apologies to the administrative board saying that they truly meant it as a prank. They didn't mean for anybody to get hurt.
Yeah.
Nobody did get hurt. And they created a Facebook page titled Let Tom and Enko Walk at Graduation. This Facebook page, as of now, has 3,950 likes.
Huh.
Nice. Way to go, so Star Wars community.
Yeah.
But anyway, the administration said that they gave them a warning. Quote, these are all great kids with super futures and they understand the consequences of their action.
Little known was shortly afterwards, the two high school now graduates were confiding late at night on their back porch. And as one's head turned to the side, at last we will feel ourselves to the admins. At last we will have revenge.
Staged fight with lightsabers is causing a lot of commotion at Westfield High School. 22 News reporter Shannon Halligan explains why this show has students protesting.
Two Westfield High School's seniors have been suspended for 10 days because of this lightsaber fight. Kevin Carr is a senior there, and he said he was in the lunchroom when this happened. He explained that the two boys are friends and planned a fake plastic lightsaber Star Wars fight. Then they were escorted out and given the suspension and the news that they would not be walking at graduation next Friday.
Like, nobody else got hurt from it. Nobody else got, like, it wasn't during any class periods or anything, so I thought it was very innocent prank of the joke.
They very easily could have hit another student. It could have started something different. Someone could have gotten hurt, and it was just a disruptive situation, and they understand that it's not acceptable.
The principal did say there will be a hearing next week. He said he has received written apologies, and they will discuss then whether the two will be able to walk at graduation. Live in the newsroom, Shannon Halligan, 22 News.
So, yes, eventually it was resolved, but there's a hearing. Suspension? See, the thing about suspensions is that suspensions carry the potential of exclusion from senior activities, including graduation night, as the principal of the school said.
Yeah.
So it was a very serious thing for these two kids. I mean, it affected their whole future at the time if they couldn't graduate, you know.
Splitting hairs, really. I mean, we're talking about a collapsible plastic lightsaber. Go back 50 or so years to corporal punishment, and they had a wooden ruler that they were whipping kids with. Are you telling me that a plastic lightsaber is going to do more damage than what they used to get away with back in the day? I mean, it's just flexing of corporate power in the administrative system. It's a principle that just pushing that envelope of, oh, somebody could get hurt. We got to make an example of this.
What I was surprised the sound clip didn't show was the principal saying, it is with great reluctance that I have suspended these children.
Yeah, and see, the thing is...
I love lightsabers.
Really?
I love battling. I assure you.
Oh, goodness. And the thing is, quite honestly, if I were worried about being hurt by someone else in a school, I would be much more afraid of being hit by someone or being smacked with a ginormous algebra book than I would be about a little plastic lightsaber. Riley and I fought with plastic lightsabers all the time when we were little. We had lightsaber
still
fights
do.
On a daily, almost hourly basis
we
at
still
some
fight
points.
Every day, no.
Oh, come on.
Isn't that rule one of lightsaber choreograph? Don't hit yourself really hard. Don't hit the guy you're fighting really hard.
Exactly. All right. The official Celebration 6 announcement has happened. Finally, after teasing us with changing the color of the logo multiple times on the official Celebration 6 website, we finally do now know that Celebration 6 is returning to Orlando,
Florida.
I need the Ewok music. Yup, nup. Now, I think this has been fairly positive all-around response. A lot of people still worried about the heat. I'm mostly excited because, ladies and gentlemen, we're going. I can definitely say that. Although, if I might make a quick comment, It would be awfully cool if Billy Dee Williams would be there this time. He would cool down Orlando.
Oh, yes.
All right. But yes, returning to Orlando at the Orange County Convention Center. It's Celebration 6, August 2012. Right before, a couple months before the world ends. So I'm glad they got it in there. Everybody's wondering, why is it 2 years rather than 3 years? Instead of doing 2013, which is, of course, Return of the Jedi's 30th anniversary, they're doing it in a two-year time span.
George Lucas knows something.
Ah, yeah, the world's going to end. Remember, actually, who was it? That wasn't Seth MacFarlane. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. It was, there's the comedian who a while back said that George Lucas actually thought the world would end in 2012.
Seth Rogen.
Thank you, Seth Rogen, yeah. Green Hornet. He was on the press circuits. Of course, it turned out that he was joking, of course. But
oh, I met up with George Lucas, and now, oh my gosh, the guy said the world was going to end. I couldn't believe it.
And then people took him seriously. I mean, seriously, a comedian? Comedians make jokes,
no.
Guys.
Yeah, but what's interesting is I'd like to run by a couple ideas. Let's look at the stats. A lot of people are wondering or thought that Celebration 5 was not the most successful. It wasn't the least successful by any means. But as compared to Celebration 1, which was in horrible rain in Denver, Colorado.
I guess it was second least.
Yeah, it was second least. Of course, Celebration 1, only 20,000. But the highest was actually 75,000 attendees to Celebration 2 in Indianapolis, which was about the time Attack of the Clones was coming out, which is, if I know odd, I would have thought the one around Episode 3. But, of course, then Celebration 3 around the time of Revenge of the Sith had 34,000. Celebration 4, 35,000. Celebration 5, 32,000. Of course, there's no movie year, so it's really only the more hardcore audience, I think, attending.
So I have a quick question. Do you think it is the fact that Attack of the Clones was coming out at the time that C2 had 75,000 attendees? That's a drastic, massive increase in numbers from 20,000.
With the exception of Denver in 1999, Celebration 2 was the most central location in Indianapolis. It's kind of like the middle of the country as compared to Celebration 4 or 5.
Huh.
But I think you'll
be able to say what you're seeing. I want to say what you're seeing there is a lot of old school fanboys and fangirls' hearts being broken. And after that, they just said, we're done. You know, from a fandom standpoint, you see a lot of fans see a certain aspect of what they loved about Star Wars come and go, whether it be by the EU or by George's vision saying, no, I don't want to go that direction. And they'll drop out of things. And I think that's a good number of why you see that drop right there. Was you had a lot of fans that did not like the prequels, and Episode 2 was the one that really cinched it for them. By Episode 2, they were like, this is not my Star Wars, and walked away. You know, that's not our case. We love the prequels as well as the original trilogy, but there was that element in fandom, and I think that is what you're seeing there, because you'll notice that there is about a good 30 or 25,000 fans that have not come back from C2. I mean, they came there, they had the interest once.
Yeah.
I have a quick question then. Do you guys think that we'll see the numbers grow, like significantly grow, for C6, despite the economy, despite being the same place?
Yeah.
Despite being just 2 years.
Celebration 5 was August 2010. The economy was in the tank much more so than it is now, and hopefully much more so than it will be in 2012. Hopefully things will look up a little bit more. I know that they've given us, goodness, like 15 months of lead time, so a lot more people can plan way ahead, including you, Mark. Hopefully it's looking like you might be able to attend, which is really cool. We'll actually possibly get to meet each other for the first time.
Yeah.
See, and I'm mixed on it, because it's like having the extra length of time is great on the savings, but they're going to open the ticket sales, and the rich cats are going to come in there and swoop up all the tickets. So by the time the poor cats can save up their money, there ain't going to be much left. And so it's like there's that timeline feel of like, I got to have this money fast, because
you
got to tickets go, they're
gotta get
gone.
Those hotels and passes. Yeah, well, there is that factor. But I will say the Orange County Convention Center is huge. And so it can accommodate, I could say, easily probably up to about 100,000. We only used about half of the convention center. There were whole huge areas that were sectioned off that weren't used.
Actually, not even half, Riley. Yeah. That was one massive building of the two-part convention center.
There was a Star Trek convention upstairs that nobody knew about. No, I'm kidding.
Upstairs? You mean in the basement?
Well, actually, a little bit of a secret here. When we were waiting in the line to go see George Lucas and John Stewart, which was a multiple hour long, all night long line, I wandered off during the middle of it to try to get a picture of this massive snaking line down a ginormous long hallway. And I noticed that there were covered walkways above us in this multi-layered building. So I found an elevator and was like, I think I will just go up. So I went up a story. When I got out, I couldn't find those covered walkways anywhere, which is kind of weird because it was almost like I stepped from one dimension into another. So I went up again and I could see the walkways, but I never actually managed to get to them.
Yeah.
But I wandered around for about half an hour and found vast sections of huge halls and banquet halls and massive kitchen type areas. Mm-hmm. And it was huge. And
yeah.
And deserted, like, and
stay
I was
on
like,
the yellow brick road, Bethany. Stay on brick road.
I did come back.
Sort of like those areas where you would look up and you would see like these open glass walled hallways that were above you, and other sections of the convention centers that weren't accessible to anyone. It's like Camino when you see.
Yeah, I think I just managed to slip through on a little service elevator or something.
Ah, the Bothan spy truly coming forward. But yeah, no, it's a great convention center, and I do think that there will be plenty of room to pack all the fans that need to be in.
If I may make a prediction, I think that one reason I think that we will see numbers of attendance go up at Celebration 6, and I think one reason for this will be we will have a new generation of fans attending. The Clone Wars has really been going as a TV show. We have the Old Republic that's still going strong, apparently.
Well, we're still waiting.
we're still waiting. But I think that we'll have a new generation and a new type of Star Wars fan coming.
That's right. You know, that's what I wanted to mention as well, because I don't necessarily think it'll be C6 or Celebration 6 that it's going to be doing it so much. But the next ones that follow that, you're going to see the number increase dramatically.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why, because the six-year-olds are going to be, you know,
they're coming.
Pushing 12. And yeah, I mean, they're going to be like, Dad, we got to go. And the dad's like, yeah, we do. And the dad's like, Grandpa, you got to come. And Grandpa's like, heck yeah, we do. And you know, you're going to see a lot more family affair happening, because that's what's happening Friday and Saturday nights and Saturday mornings is the families are coming together. I don't watch the Clone Wars by myself. I watch it with my dad and my son. And, you know, sometimes my daughter will kick in and watch it with us. And sometimes, you know, my wife or my mom will come in and watch it as well, because I always invite everybody over on those nights. It's like, you know, hey, Clone Wars is going to be on. Let's do a barbecue and let's watch some Clone Wars, you know, because it's
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And I really do think Celebration 6 will be a much bigger success because of the multi-generational aspects there. So I guess when I think about it, I'm obviously just very much looking forward to it. And we'll be driving down from Atlanta and making that long road trip. And you got to remember, this is 2012. You were mentioning this in the chat a while ago, Mark. It seems like it's this year, and then you have to remember, it's next year. So we've got a long wait here, but we'll definitely be bringing you updates of Celebration 6 as news comes out about it. And you can expect some fabulous, fabulous coverage of Celebration 6. But before we leave the topic, let's go do the quick roundtable and just pick one thing that we're really looking forward to about Celebration 6. You want to kick this off, Bethany?
Sure, yes. One thing, the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to at C6 is just the experience of Celebration overall. And I know that's a cheap cop.
Good answer.
I know that's a cop-out answer, but Celebration 5 was like nothing I'd ever seen or done or been to in my life. And it was a unique, wonderful experience, and I enjoyed experiencing it with friends and family. So just experiencing Celebration, walking through the long hallways, seeing costumed fans everywhere, and meeting up with people that I had just been getting to know when we were just barely beginning the Bothan Report.
Yeah.
Mr. Mark,
what
is one thing you're
looking for? This would be your first Celebration if you're able to attend, am I right?
That's right. And for me, it's along the same lines as Bethany. For me, it's about the community. There's all sorts of announcements and things like that that I'm immediately excited for. You know, I'm a huge EU fan, so any new books, new comics, meeting the creators of, you know, those things are exciting for me. Meeting the actors of the shows, the voices of the characters, all that stuff. Meeting you guys, you know, I mean, in the flesh, that's all exciting things, because, you know, when you're out here on the East Coast or the West Coast, you guys on the East Coast, I don't know. You guys all seem so close yet so far apart. Yeah. But over here, I mean, we are far apart. There's a lot of Star Wars fans, but it seems like, you know, some casual fans, and then you'll run into one or two of the fans that, like, you know, myself, consider themselves a little more hardcore, not in the aspect of I'm better than you, but I take my obsession a little crazy, you know? I'm a little insane with mine, and that's why I consider myself a little hardcore. I'm a mental case with my obsessions. And I run across a couple of those, but, you know, getting those fans that live near me together is nigh impossible. So getting with a bunch of fans that get a just complete fan geek gasm on when they see this kind of level of Star Wars interaction that I have, you know, I just can't wait to be sitting with like 30 people and they're all just about to pass out because of sheer just geekness. You know, I mean, that's I've only had that at going to the theaters. You know, you go to the theater, you see episode 3, you're there with a bunch of people that got their lightsabers out and you're like, dang it, I should have brought my lightsaber, you know, and that for me was as good as it got. So to go to see something like this, it's got to be how it was for you last year, Bethany, because I've got expectations and I expect them all to be blown.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I'll go ahead and my thing, if I was going to pick one thing that I'm looking forward to very much, so is similar to both your guys, but to step back from it all from a moment of outside of like, we'll be talking about, goodness, Clone Wars Season 5 at that point. That's so weird. But we'll be talking about Clone Wars Season 5, and we'll be getting together and furthering relationships with people that we only get to interact with online. And what I mean by step back, if you look at the situation, you will get to meet people that you've talked to and feel like you know because of what you can do through technology, through social networking, through Skype as we are talking right now, and through podcasting, and all these relationships that we've built that are at this point completely virtual. The only way we can communicate is through this weird thing called the internet. And and I can only imagine how technology is going to improve how we can use an event like this that brings many people together of a common interest. But really, these events transcend the subject matter. It's not really even about Star Wars once you get right down to it. It's about who you're meeting and the good time you're having. So if I was going to talk to the listeners and they were still considering, and obviously this is way far away, take the time that you have over the next while, the next 15, whatever, 16 months, and save up. It is worth it because you get to go meet people, have a good time, build those relationships, interact physically in a community and in person, you know. And so that's really what makes these events so special. I remember when I first kind of came online, so to speak, came out of the unconnected, off the grid, to use a Tron reference, and got in the grid of the Star Wars fan community online. That was right post Celebration 4 at the time. And I was hearing all these people who had gone to it, and there was this connection between people that is visible even on things like Twitter and Facebook and that sort of thing. I was like, well, it's just, you know,
it's just a con.
You're just staying at people dressing up and staying at hotels and
aren't
all,
you guys on the same podcast? I never even met these Bothans before.
Exactly. And you're going to all the same panels and seeing the same video that trailer will be online within a number of hours anyway.
Or staying up three quarters of the night
waiting in line to see George Lucas when you can see him on a screen or something. But it's not about that. It's really about the community and about the relationships that you can build with people. And so that is what I am most looking forward to about Celebration 6, meeting you, Mark, seeing the guys from EU Cantina again, seeing all these people that I've met after Celebration 5 who were there, and we just never crossed paths, and maybe we will at Celebration 6. So definitely, definitely looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome.
George Lucas, your movies have made millions of dollars. You, a king of Hollywood. What I want to know is, what is next for George Lucas?
I'm going to Disneyland. And then I'm building a ride.
In 1980, George Lucas created a franchise.
What I really want to do is start making smaller, more personal films.
Be careful, George.
What?
George, what's going on?
Oh my God.
George!
What's going on? Where am I?
Lock me out of here!
Let me out of here.
George Lucas's Star Wars prequels have received terrible reviews from critics and sparked rage amongst the Star Wars fan base.
That's not me. That's impossible.
Hollywood insiders are questioning whether George Lucas has become totally lame.
No! It's an imposter! While his legacy was destroyed.
Oh my goodness. And so there it is, ladies and gentlemen. George Lucas strikes back. And there, by the way, is where the 30,000 people from Celebration 2 went. who didn't like the prequels as much. Oh me. That's an awesome trailer, by the way.
Yes,
that was a funny video.
It does make fun of the prequels. It does make fun of some of the stuff that I love. But it's still so funny in and of itself.
I just love it's that hilarious. People have the amazing childhood memories of the original trilogy, which are so timeless, and why so many people love it. And you know, when the prequels just didn't live up to their expectations, if nothing else, they can go make a George Lucas heist fan film. I would totally go see this movie if it was a
so
real
would
movie.
I.
Our next story comes from Roku Depot. Ebook prices propping up a dying system. Many Bothans died to bring you this ebook. With growing sales of e-readers and the demand of ebooks, consumers are being exposed to a startling disparity between the prices of physical books versus the price of digital copies. Many people have asked themselves why. The answer is a combination of several factors, all falling back on one solitary issue. The first factor is ebook retailers Apple and Amazon. The second factor is the major publishing houses. And the final factor is the downfall of the music industry. Interesting. Now you alerted us to this story, Mark. So what's going on here? Are ebooks propping up a dying system, as he says here?
Well, I was wondering when I went and got Conviction for my Kindle because the price had gone up. I was like, oh, what the heck's up with this? And then I found this nice little story, and I was reading up on it, and it makes sense on one hand why they're doing what they're doing. They want to increase book sales. But when you hear, you know, the people for the books talking, they're talking about how ebooks are basically killing books in print. But they're kind of hemming and hawing around things. They're just talking about hardcovers. They could care less about paper book sales. And I find that very irritating as a Star Wars fan because I would prefer the paperbacks. I mean, I know I'm not the only fan out there that does, and I know I'm not the only fan who doesn't just as well, but they're doing this in this aspect to help the hardcover sales last longer. Because right now you get your hardcover and you have to wait a year to get it in paperback. And they do that just so the hardcovers can maintain their sales. But you got fans out there like me that are OCD enough that we cannot wait that year and remain spoiler free so we buy the hardcover book. I've been switching to ebooks. Well, the publishing industry's way of doing that was, well, we'll just raise the ebooks. And they do that, and they say they're doing it not because they want to gain money, but they want to decrease the interest in ebooks so people will go back to buying paper or the hardcover books. And I find that just brain damaged. I mean, I've been for a long time wanting to see a hardcover, the paperback, and the ebook all released on the same day. Do that for a year. Let's see where the real interest is, because there are a lot of fans like myself out there that are massaging the hardcover sales. You're getting a lot more hardcovers being bought by fans that have no care for a hardcover. They just want the story and don't want to wait a year to get their paperback.
Yeah.
And that number is throwing it off. And so you've got the industry thinking that the hardcover is the baby, the bread, the basket, and they got to do everything they can to save that. And they're pronouncing it like, oh, the book industry is dying because of ebooks. It's like, no, you got fans out there like me that are going to be buying it on their ebook and turning around and buying the paperback copy, because I will be buying both. I just am sick and tired of buying the hardcovers because I don't like paying $27 for the book anymore. It doesn't fit on my bookshelf. I have to set it sideways to get it to fit. And so for me, I've been wanting to see the paperbacks come up, you know, not maybe a full year. You know, it doesn't have to be the same day. I'd love to see it on the same day, but maybe even 6 months. But, you know, this whole article and they really are nailing the fact that the books and stuff are a dying system, and they label the downfall of the music industry as an example of. And I think in this case, from the business standpoint of books, they're putting all their eggs in the hardcover basket, and that's a failing motto. They're going to go down burning because not enough people care about hardcovers anymore.
And I know several people who are publishing, self-publishing on the Amazon marketplace and charging $1 for their book or $2 for their book. And they're completely self-publishing. And really, it's kind of funny because from what I know of it, and I'm no industry expert or anything, but from what I've seen, the way Amazon accounts for a huge percentage of book sales, both digital and non-digital. A lot of people buy their books on Amazon, and the publishers really have to depend on Amazon as a sales outlet. Now, Amazon, I'm guessing if they wanted to, could put their foot down and hold the prices at something reasonable. At least, you know, keep it down maybe $10 or something. But
they actually did. Amazon was basically they're calling it the pricing battles, and Amazon and Apple were sort of at each other's throats over pricing battles because the iBook store doesn't want any other company to sell the ebooks at any other price than what they set.
No.
Or at any other cheaper price anyway. Big surprise there. But Amazon, without any explanation or public announcement, stopped selling on all of a sudden, just completely on one day, stopped selling any books from the publisher Macmillan from its virtual shelves.
So they just stopped. What, Macmillan was the name? Just no Macmillan books.
Yeah, and they're a major publishing company.
Okay.
Massive publishing company.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically at the heart of this move was the dispute over the pricing. Amazon would like to continue to dictate terms to the publishers in order to maximize their profits. Good. That's what they're there for. They try to make profits.
Yeah.
Apple's trying to make profits too, and they deals with the publishers, and the publishers want to make profits. This is very indicative of the age we live in, of the internet age.
Yeah. I mean, it's not all cherries and roses, folks.
Yeah.
But sometimes...
Basically, so there are two models that were in play. And one model was Amazon utilizes its near monopoly position to take an extremely steep wholesaler's discount. Basically, they buy up massive amounts of books and rights to those books.
Yeah, you buy 30,000 copies of the latest Fate of the Jedi book,
and you can
get away with charging $10 for it.
Basically, Amazon pays out the nose to publish these books, and then turns around and sells them for a price that is not a profit. The reason they can do it is because their company is so massive that by the time X number of people have bought the books, while it would not have made any profit, while it would have been a loss in a small bookstore, a major loss in a small bookstore, they have so many consumers that they know that they'll make up for it in the sheer number of books that are published.
It's classic monopoly.
So it is a monopoly in that part. But what Apple wants to do is basically say no one can sell them at any price. We need to protect this industry. We need to protect these prices. The publishers want to sell for this price. We want to sell for this price. The authors want to sell for this price. But what all of these companies are not realizing is some very similar to the music industry. This simply won't last.
Yeah, and that was the part about this article that really jumped out to me. I mean, they continue to go on about the price, and they say, thus the higher prices are not because the publishers are trying to make more money off of ebooks, but because they need the price of ebooks to be high in order to continue to sell print books. And of course, when they say they're only concerned with hardcovers.
And so then what can Amazon or Apple do as a company? They need to make profits too. But I think very similar to the music industry, what people need to do is, like the publishers Riley spoke of, and this is sheerly my opinion, publish your book online. You make money off of ads. You make money off of people buying it. You don't deal with a publisher. And yes, that's being very mean to publishers, but publishers need to evolve with the evolving system. They need to evolve with the consumer's wants and with the technology that's available.
And because it continues
exactly like the music industry.
And the guy goes, it's understandable that consumers would choose to purchase a cheap ebook over the expensive price tag attached to a hardcover book. And that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
With the increasing sales of e-readers, more and more people now have the option of purchasing ebooks over physical books. Granted, I would still buy my paperback. Okay. And they're not thinking about that. If such a trend were to reach its inevitable end point, then the existing system would crash. I mean, basically, they're saying it's going to at some point. But of course, you know, they're ignoring the paperbacks. They're only
talking about the latest
with the hard
ebook publication from Del Rey at Celebration 6. And we might be talking about reading it on devices. I mean, I love the idea of an ebook. And, you know, monopolies are never good. But I know the consumers aren't going to complain about cheaper prices. That's for certain. And, for instance, you can see there's a book. It's called The Grendel Shadow. It's by a fellow by the name of Andrew Main. And he's a podcaster. And basically, it's just an ebook that he just wrote the book himself, put it up on Amazon. It's charging 99 cents for it, and there's no publisher. He gets a nice, healthy chunk of that profit, nice commission. So it's a good for the author and good for Amazon. There's no publisher, though. So, I mean, the model, the idea of publishing, it, and this was is the case with music, and this is the case with books, this is the case with films, movies. It's something that's changing. And why are we talking about this? It's very relevant to us as Star Wars fans because we happen to like Star Wars books, Star Wars movies, you know, Star Wars TV shows. So publishing is the idea of getting out your product, your story, to a large audience. And back in the days when the only way you could access someone's published books was at your local bookshop, then you needed a publisher so that they could distribute your book to all the local bookshops.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's larger retail bookshops like Barnes & Noble and et cetera. But slowly the need for those as digital copies of books comes about is waning for sure. So,
and we're not saying either that they're unnecessary or that we don't want them. Just if they would evolve their business model to fit the demands of the public and, you know, the demands of the new system. Even movies and TV shows these days. How many free TV shows are there on Hulu? Hundreds. And yeah. They're new TV shows. They're not just backlogged old 80s shows. No offense to the 80s. But you can't speak on that, Mark. Just be quiet. So we get this content for free. It gets leaked online. It gets put online by the companies on purpose. Because they know they'll make enough money through advertising and through dealing with people like Hulu that they will make profit on it. And the consumers don't have to pay for it. This is a fantastic business model. I'm a consumer. If I don't have to pay for something, it makes me very happy.
See, I see hardcovers as VHS tapes, your paperbacks are DVDs, and your ebooks are your MP3s. I mean, technology is putting the old dinosaurs to rest. And The problem with our publishing system is they only care about hardcover sales. You know, and it goes into your ebooks here. Now, the ebook cost will be reflecting the hardcover pricing. So your books now will be $13.99 until the mass market paperback finally comes out a year later. And then the price drops to the paperback price. I mean, you know, it's all set up to try to force some fans that can't wait to get that hardcover. And I think that is just a poor way to keep business alive.
Yeah, it's not really a way to force specific people to do what they want, but they're trying desperately to maintain their current model. And basically, if you're a company, you don't want to be static.
Yeah.
You always want to know what the consumer wants and how the consumer will get it. If you are a business company that sells things, you cater to your consumer.
Yeah. And I say force, and I mean that loosely, because I mean, bottom line, no one's forced to buy anything. I mean, personally, my new motto is going to be, you know, when it comes to hardcovers, I'm going to go ebook all the way over that. And hardcovers my last, because I'm going to be getting them all in ebook at some point now that all the old stories are out there and available and are going to be made more available. I mean, I want to have the mobile library, but I still, you know, look behind me in this video. I got a huge library. That's not going away. I'm going to continue to add to that. But I'm also going to add to my e-library. And that's something that they need to, at the publishing thing, is look at, there are fans like me out there that are going to continue to buy your paperbacks, whether they're buying the hardcovers. And they're just so worried about those hardcovers. And that's the thing. It's like, they talk about the book industry going down. And I think that you'll always have people out there buying paperbacks and even hardcovers. Yeah. You're going to lose a lot of hardcover buyers, but they're going to still be there.
Our new age has already proven that with the advent of Blu-ray. Blu-ray is nowhere nearly as mainstream as DVDs are, despite the superior quality and the comparable price. Now, a Blu-ray disc might be only a couple bucks more, but people still don't buy them because I think largely due to the digital distribution models that people have. You can buy a Clone Wars episode on iTunes the day after it comes out. It's not on Zune yet, and it's not on Amazon the day of. It actually might be on Amazon. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. It's just going on the internet. There's no problem here. But it proves that there will always be a model for someone who wants that physical copy, whether it be a DVD or whether it be a book. You want, you know, something that you can put on your shelf. You want something like that. Now, for instance, last night I downloaded Attawan Star Wars Revisited, a fan edit of the Star Wars film. Haven't watched it all yet, but it was what I have watched is awesome. Beautiful, high resolution quality on the DVD. I burned it to a DVD, but I didn't want to just do that, so I went online and I downloaded a fan cover art, printed the cover art, got out a blank DVD case, slipped it all together, and now I have a nice case with Attawan Star Wars Revisited, and it's in my DVD. It's in the DVD collection.
And he
I'm so jealous right now, dude. So jealous.
And it's not like that cost me. Well, other than printing the printing ink, it didn't cost me anything. But I still wanted to have it, have a copy of it. I could have just left it as a digital file on the laptop, but I didn't want to do that.
You just made another little box on my checklist of DVDs now. Thanks.
Yeah, and I love reading. I've been reading since I was about 3. I love the smell and feel of an old leather-bound book. I read just about anything I can get my grubby little paws on. So I understand the feeling of wanting a physical book, if that's what you like.
Yeah, yeah.
That when I see a hardcover book and I want it and I see that it's $23 and I'm thinking, there goes a nice toy that I could buy at Celebration 6. There
that's
goes
a
dinner
at
out at a halfway decent restaurant with my friends. You know, it's...
Do
I really want to pay that much for a book? I am a frequent habiter of a library for that reason. Multiple libraries, actually.
And that's a thing. I mean, when you've got a library, it's easier to say, I'll wait.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when I say a lot of people are forced, there are a lot of people in the situation where there is no library.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they find themselves, it's either I get this now and be spoiled, or, you know, or I wait and I get spoiled by one of my friends. You know, I know people that are like that.
Yeah.
I have friends that go out of their way to spoil other friends just because they're like,
on.
Oh, he got me before. Oh, dude, I had two twin brothers that I got hooked on Star Wars. And these two were like bouncing around on books and they were just hosing each other over and over. You know, oh, does he know yet? Okay, I'll run in and tell him. Oh, guess who's gonna die? It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you just spoiled that. And, you know, it's those kind of people find themselves in a weird position because they're like, they're going to spend the extra money because they don't want to find themselves spoiled, because that totally ruins a book when somebody does that to you. You're just like, dude, I can't enjoy this book now. I hate it.
Listeners, you can really tell that we don't like to read or anything, right?
No.
Nah. Yeah. So moving on.
LucasArts eyes return to form. The goal is to create, quote, high-quality Star Wars game. This comes from MCVUK.com. LucasArts boss Paul Meakin has told MCV that he feels people look at the firm and wonder, quote, why it hasn't done better. In his first interview since becoming president of the firm a year ago, I remember covering this on EUcast when they changed out presidents. Meegan says he wants to reverse that perception with a focus on decent Star Wars games. I love the word decent, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that gets back to what do they consider decent? I mean, I thought there was quite a few decent games out there. And I thought the model set up was that to have the decent game, you had to go and hire the best. And obviously, when it came to gaming, BioWare was the best.
we'll talk on that in just a moment. Let's see. There are two big Star Wars games set for E3, which is, of course, going on today as we speak. Star Wars Kinect and The Old Republic, but neither are made by LucasArts itself. When Meegan took over, the firm restructured its development teams as production finished on The Force Unleashed 2 and is now working on new projects. I'm very curious now. Meegan continues, LucasArts is a company with tremendous potential. I think people look at it and wonder why it hasn't done better in recent years. Lucasfilm has some of the most beloved and powerful brands in entertainment. We have a loyal community of fans and talented people in every discipline. We're surrounded by staggeringly bright and creative people at the top of their games. In recent years, LucasArts hasn't always done a good job of making games. We should be making games that define our medium, that are competitive with the best of our industry, but we're not. That has to change. Our priority is to create authentic, immersive, high-quality Star Wars games. Man, I read over that. I have never heard a CEO or boss, as they put it here. I'm not really sure. I guess president of LucasArts, emperor.
Head of the company.
Emperor. It is with great Really? Okay. But no, I've never heard someone speak that overtly, frankly, about their company. And I don't even... I'm someone who's kind of stuck up with for LucasArts in recent years, or at least the recent year or so, because I like The Force Unleashed 2. And there's a lot of flack from the gaming community, but really... Gaming has gotten, the technology behind it has gotten so good, it's insane. I mean, it just amazes me what they're able to do with some of these games, some of the trailers that I've been seeing today from E3. And I think, as a result, I mean, the gaming community, to be quite frankly honest, what do you guys think? I think they're pretty hard to please.
Well, we are and we aren't. I mean, there have been some simple games out there that we've been clamoring for. I mean... You know, look at the Battlefront games, and they gave them to us on the PSP and you know, these little handheld portable versions, and they could have just as easily taken those same two games, put them in a combo pack, and released them on the Xbox as a third, and you would have had so many fans happy. Rogue Squadron games. I mean, you know, there's a lot of simple game formats out there. The KOTOR games, I mean, you know, we're getting the TOR game itself, but there are a lot of pretty successful games out there that fans are clamoring for sequels to. Republic Commando. I mean, I could throw names at you all day. There are also a lot of them that failed. Masters of Terras Kai. I mean, you know, that you've got them on both sides here. But the bottom line was, even the ones that failed, there was an element of winning inside there that if they would have taken that in and shaped it in a different direction, the game would have been a win-win.
Yeah.
Win here, win there.
Win everywhere. Yeah, I think you're right, Mark. And I've heard a fairly universal sentiment about LucasArts not producing high enough quality games. But, I mean, I did enjoy Force Unleashed 2, and I thought it was a pretty good game. And I love the Lego games. And, of course, those are also outsourced. But
I love taking him apart when he's built Legos in a game. Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
See, my thing with the whole LucasArts and BioWare... For the most part, I didn't even realize half the games weren't LucasArts games. And to me, I thought that was part of the model. I mean, Lucas has been a master of going out and using the best out there, whether it was under his company's name or not, and producing a great product. And I don't care if he's going to BioWare or some other company if the game is awesome and rocks your socks.
Exactly.
I mean, and even The Force Unleashed 2 had elements of sock-rocking action.
One thing I find very interesting about this is the fact that he says that, quote, we're not, and that has to change. We should be making games that define our medium. If he thinks that the games that they're making aren't up to snuff right now, I'm wondering what's coming.
That makes you wonder about the whole technology side of things. Like, you know, we just have the recent announcement about Kinect. And in that aspect, you think about, like, Lucas as a company. They're always pushing and redefining things, and that's what he's saying right here. And you've got Kinect that we're able to, you know, for the first time ever, kind of really get the lightsaber action we're always wanting to.
Yeah.
And they're kind of still on the cusp of getting it right. I mean, it's a lot better than it's ever been, but it looks like it still has a lot of room to grow. And I think that, you know, they're looking at that, and I think that they're focusing on how can we utilize this and maximize this.
Yeah, and I am encouraged to hear him speak that frankly. I'm not sure I agree with him, and he's the CEO of the company. So that's kind of the strangest words coming from Mr. Megan there. But I guess I think it's a good sign, though. I think it's a good sign that LucasArts, well, A, let's see, where is he says that? He mentions that they are producing more in-house LucasArts games. So maybe we'll finally get another Jedi Knight game or something like that. That would be kind of cool. But there are all kinds of games that I would love to see. And
you remember that game Dragon's Lair? The one where it was like, it would show you an arrow that would point left and you'd knock the joystick left. And the whole game was basically a movie. At this point, watching things like the trailer for Return of Tor and Hope and Deceived, I'm ready for a game like that again where I don't have to do much but push an arrow and watch the movie unfold. Because, I mean, I just see that and I'm drooling. I'm like, why can't we have this in a movie? Just awesomeness.
Yeah. I want
more on that next episode.
Exactly. Yes. I know. I
was about to light into all of my exciting thoughts that next episode.
Well, I'd like next episode when we do our E3 episode to really strongly make the case for an Old Republic or Legacy series that's on screen, one way or the other.
Ooh. I like the way you're going with that.
Can you imagine? I mean, if I was just seeing the amazing work that Blur Studios is doing with these older public cutscenes, and we now can confirm that Blur Studios is producing cutscenes. I mean,
not necessarily, absolutely.
The trailer that was just released today is like a 6-minute opening cutscene to the Old Republic game. So it's basically all but certain that Blur Studios is producing the cutscenes to this game. So you know what I'm doing when this game's coming out. I'm watching YouTube like a hawk every day for people to be uploading all of the cutscenes from the Old Republic. Because honestly, the gameplay to me does not appeal to me very much, personally. I'm not a big RPG guy. I'm just honestly not the biggest RPG guy. But I would like to see those cutscenes.
Okay.
See, I'm right there with you. The KOTOR game, some of the best cutscenes I've seen. A fan took, edited those, KOTOR 1, KOTOR 2, and they gave you the tale of Revan's life set through cutscenes and video gameplay, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Yes, it was, and I always love to see those kind of fan edits, so to speak. You know, just like Edwan, Star Wars Revisited, I loved the...
Awesome.
Someone made like a Force Unleashed movie that was pretty cool. But before we go, I'd like to do one quick note that there's a project that's being headed up by Eric Walker. Of course, the guy who was in...
Ewoks.
Thank you, yeah. Thank
Caravan
you.
Of Courage.
Who's in the Ewok films. Of course, the Ewok Adventure in the Ewoks Battle for Endor, and I think Caravan of Courage. But yeah, Eric Walker, I believe he's the lead star. But anyway, he's
Mace.
He has a Kickstarter page up because he wants to write a book about his experiences growing up on Skywalker Ranch. So I'd like to highly encourage you guys to head over. I mean, I want to read this book, but I want to highly encourage our listeners to go head over to a Kickstarter page. You can just go to Kickstarter and search Growing Up on Skywalker Ranch or Eric Walker, either one, and donate. And Kickstarter's pretty awesome. I love this idea of crowdsourcing the funds that it takes to do stuff. But let me read a little excerpt here. Growing up on Skywalker Ranch will chronicle my adventures in the Star Wars universe, playing the leading role of Mace Tawani in George Lucas' Star Wars spinoff movies, The Ewok Adventure and Ewoks, The Battle for Endor. Most people think that George Lucas did not direct until episode 1 in the late 90s, but I have proof that he did, and I'm excited to finally have the opportunity to share this amazing experience. Yes, George Lucas directed the reshoots of the Ewok Adventure, because the credited director John Corti had a prior commitment and couldn't be there. Ah, they need someone for the Ewok movie. Sure, sure. And so, yes, head over to Kickstarter, search for Growing Up on Skywalker Ranch. This looks like a really cool book. And before we go, I wanted to go ahead and let's give our thoughts. It's been Star Wars weekends are still going on, and Star Tours, of course, has been a rousing success with, of course, George Lucas in attendance at the event. And, I mean, it just looked like an awesome, awesome time. But the new Star Tours has a bunch of new footage. Star Wars footage. I mean, what more can you say? That's pretty awesome if you ask me. So let me go ahead and cue this up, guys.
And we'll get 54 different variants of the ride when you mix and match these different locations.
Wow. Yeah,
I know. We'll have to go 54 times when we go to Celebration 6, Mark. It will be awesome.
We're going to be up all night.
That I'm looking forward to.
All right, here we go. It's an opening shot, and we're kind of seeing... this is a compilation, I should say, first of, from Inside the Magic YouTube channel, the official Disney channel. And it's basically just some shots of the various Star Wars locations that we're looking at here. And I mean, to see... Oh, I could just see this. We're looking at Hoth.
And it's all 3D.
Ah, I know. This will really tell, I think.
Looks so beautiful.
I can just see this in 3D, and it makes me so excited for the Star Wars 3D re-releases, just to see this. I mean, Kashyyyk here, when we're looking at it, really has an almost Avatar-like feel to it.
Yeah. You know, and there was recently an interview with Lucas, and he was talking about the 3D technology and how there's the out of the screen and in the screen, and that they're really focusing on the in the screen, which appeals to me a lot in the aspect of you look at these backgrounds and stuff and you think about how it goes in, and it is all, it's just like the screen just drops before you and you can see things coming, you know, what feels like miles away, and the depth of the detail as it's passing you is just insane.
Yeah, I know, we're looking at the pod race and it's so awesome. I mean, I want to see
amazing.
It's all CGI.
And the
CGI.
Millennium Falcon one is, this is sick. It bounces off this ship right there. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's, and then it flies between two TIE fighters. This is quite amazing.
Yeah, and of course, this is my favorite one. The Death Star above the planet Geonosis in construction.
Oh, wow.
But and this is not exactly the best audio content, to be honest. Oh my goodness, this is so cool.
Oh wow,
but
look at that.
It does
yeah.
make me, seeing this footage, make it's kind of, it's all CGI, but it really kind of has a post-2010 look to it. It really has a modern, updated feel. And of course, Star Wars is awesome in almost any incarnation, but to look at yeah. this footage, it makes me not only think of how excited I am for Star Wars 3D, but it also makes me extremely excited for possible future Star Wars projects that could look like this.
And by the way, for these different videos that we're watching and websites that we're quoting, you can check out our show notes at our website, StarWarsReport.com.
That's right.
We'll have expansive show notes that you can look at. You can follow through with each of the stories, each of the videos. We'll post up links there.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode. Good times. As we launch our first official episode of the Star Wars Report. No, I remembered it this time.
I'm about to come at you, son.
I know. I keep almost calling it the Bothan Report. But yeah, it's good times, guys. A lot of great news. And look forward to very soon after this episode comes out, we'll have to do our E3 episode and talk about all the Star Wars Connect, Star Wars...
The Old Republic.
Yeah, not Star Wars in concert. John Williams conducting the Imperial March. I'm extremely jealous of some of the West Coast people who are there there to see that. I really hope Star Wars in concert comes back, by the way. But yeah, like Bethany said, anything that we talk about on the show, you'll find in our show notes over at StarWarsReport.com. And... we're very pleased to announce, as we said, Aaron Goins, a contributing writer who will be posting up a recap of his experience at Disney over at... He was there. He got to ride Star Tours. So we'll look for that there. And again, all of our show notes there at StarWarsReport.com. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/StarWarsReport, or find us over on Facebook, facebook.com/StarWarsReport. And... don't forget to send us an email or anything we talked about. What do you think about the ebook pricings? Are you happy with the hardcovers? We hope not, but let us know. StarWarsReport@gmail.com. StarWarsReport@gmail.com. And I think that's going to do it for this episode. As we record this, we're still waiting for this little show of ours to show up in iTunes and Zune. But hopefully by the time this thing's released, you can go search the iTunes store and the Zune store and find that. And catch us every Thursday, 10 o'clock Eastern, on the Middle Earth Network. Middle Earth Network Radio. Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
The Star Wars Report is not affiliated with Lucasfilm Limited in any way, form, or fashion. It is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. All Star Wars names, sounds, and any other related Star Wars content are the property of Lucasfilm Limited, unless otherwise indicated.
Don't sue us, George.
Yeah, but you shouldn't have.
How do you say that? Roku Depot?
I thought it was Roku.
I think it's Roku.
Roku Depot.
Roku Depot.
This is where we talk about these things beforehand, so we're not stuck there talking like a duck.
Our next story comes from Roku Depot.
You actually did it.
You cursed me. No, I can't. Our next story comes from Roku Depot. I still can't say it right, but I got closer. Roku Devo. I can't say it.
No, you got it. Roku Devo.